Welcome. Welcome to Table Talk, a special presentation here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. I'm your host, Dick Russ, and I'm very happy to be with you today, but especially pleased to welcome our regular guest to Table Talk, Bishop Nelson Perez of the Diocese of Cleveland. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you again.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been a couple of months since our first program, and I have to tell you, it was very well received. So thank you for, you know, taking part with us, and we look forward to another good conversation here.
Great, thank you.
Since we last talked, you're coming up now on about
nine months
as the Bishop of the Diocese of Cleveland, and you recently had a major event, and I don't know if they get any bigger than that in a bishop's diocese, and that's the ordination of three men to the holy priesthood.
Right.
What a day.
It was an incredible day. Actually, I have to say, they were my first three ordinations of priests as a bishop.
Oh.
So it's not something that I had done before, so it was very special. I had ordained those three guys transitional deacons, so they were actually my first ordinations. Period.
Ah, so they're yours.
So, yeah, and then I had the privilege of ordaining them a priest just a couple of weeks ago, and it was just a grace-filled moment, and I have to say, in many ways, for me, surreal. Like, I couldn't even believe I was doing this.
I was going to
ask
you.
And there was a part of me that felt, I'm going to get in trouble.
You know, from we always hear from the new priests' perspective, how it was for them, and awe-inspiring, and however they describe it, and it's always in, like you said, almost surreal terms. But from a bishop, this is not something that's routine. This is the apostolic succession in your case, and then the laying on of hands. It must have been an awesome moment for
you. It
was,
yeah. You know, in a lot of ways, celebrating the fullness of the priesthood And for me, it was, and when I say surreal, you have to put it in a context. Mm-hmm. You know, 6 years ago, I was pastor of a parish outside of Philadelphia. So it's not like I've been a bishop for 20 years and doing this. Yeah. So 6 years ago, I was a rank and file pastor at St. Agnes in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And fast forward 6 years later, I'm ordaining priest of the Cathedral of Cleveland.
Yeah.
So it's... It was just really very, very special, and to know that at that sacramental moment that happened, and you know, in a certain time and place, only God knows in His providence what those hands will do in the service of the church, what those priests will do in serving the people of the church and saving souls in their priesthood. God only knows. All the encounters, all the moments, all the celebration of sacraments, and that's all mystery, right? That's all mystery. But for them as priests, it started at that moment, you know. And so it was a powerful moment.
And from there, they are priests forever.
That's it. Yeah.
And next year, in 2019. As things stand right now, you will have nine men ordained to be priests.
One for Korea, that we have a relationship with an archdiocese in Korea, and they come here, study here, ordain here, spend a few years here, and then go back. And then there's always two of them coming in every year. So eight for the Diocese of Cleveland, which is phenomenal. Phenomenal. We have a seminary with 80 students, of which... close to 70 of them are for the Diocese of Cleveland. From what I understand, at this point, we're looking at accepting 17, possibly 17 new
this,
students
this year?
For September.
Wow.
There's an incredible culture of vocation that has been built up here, you know, by the vocation directors. Father Bob Steck, I think, was a vocation director, followed by Father Mike Gernick, and now Father McCandles. That's just recently. I'm sure there's a whole list of them. But they have certainly created an incredible culture of vocations connected to parishes. And we hope to continue to build up on that, to go down the roads of reaching out to some of our ethnic communities and the Hispanic community. We need Hispanic priests. And so we're looking at even making that broader with God's grace.
Is there something special that allows that spark in these young men to be seen or to be nurtured in your point of view? The world has never been more distracted. There have maybe never been more things which can pull a young man or even a slightly older man away to some other area of life.
I think
What nurtures that, huh?
the vibrancy of their parish, the example of the priest in their parish, and also then a very dynamic vocation awareness and culture that has been built with all sorts of opportunities. I met with we had a dinner at the seminary a few weeks ago of those who are thinking about the priesthood. There were 90 men there. From high school to college.
And these are men who are not now seminarians.
No, they're not seminarians yet. They are thinking about, obviously, they're going to dinner with the bishop at the seminary. They're not going to a Cavs game, you know, so they're there for a purpose. And they've been identified because they have a certain, movement within their spirit that brought them there. That was very impressive, very impressive. So I think that it's just a very, very dynamic, concerted commitment in the Church of Cleveland to promote vocations. It's been cited in recent national articles as being one of the top 10 dioceses in the country for local vocations in the seminary. I think the Diocese of Cleveland was rated number two, from what I understand.
Well, this is, it's a great trend and a development, and
And a sign of great hope, an
yes,
openness of this local church.
because it's not, it's well known that the number of priests needed to meet the needs recently has not been enough, and so this is nothing but a positive development.
Absolutely.
And as we continue to get together and watch it in the months and years to come, we hopefully will expect it to just stay on the increase.
Oh,
And God
that's
will
our
grant the
hope.
increase
You
here.
can never have enough priests. Bishop Murphy from Long Island used to say that. You could never have enough priests. And while there are many ministries in the church that build up the church, sustain the church, and are important to the church, the priesthood has a singular space, a singular space called by the Lord to bring us to the altar and be a minister of the sacraments and the grace of the sacraments for all of us.
We want to remind you that you're listening to a special program here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. This is Table Talk with Bishop Nelson Perez. And we're pleased to have the Bishop of the Diocese of Cleveland here with us for this special program. You mentioned, Bishop, when we're talking about priests reaching out into the Hispanic community, obviously that's a special focus of yours. We touched on it in our first edition of Table Talk. Soon you will be giving a presentation to your brother bishops and other meetings of bishops about your work with Encuentro, which is the faith-building and leadership program for Hispanic Catholics. You were recently in Detroit
Right.
with a kind of a two-state
Region six, yeah.
regional meeting about this, and then you have a national position, and you're going to broaden that out. Well, exactly how does that work, and what is your role here?
Well, I'm chair right now of the Bishop's Committee on Hispanic Affairs, under which the fifth Encuentro is housed, if you will. Now it's the fifth Encuentro because there's been four others. And the Encuentro process is not so much a program, it's not an event, it is a process of ecclesial prayer and consultation by which the bishops have convoked the Hispanic community, always centered around two fundamental questions. How can the church better serve the Hispanic presence in the United States? And how can the Hispanic community, to put in our own language of today, better serve the world as missionary disciples? So those are the two fundamental questions that are being asked. And what's beautiful about the Fifth Encuentro process is that it began at the parish level. So the Encuentro process of consultation, which involved the setting up of of a parish team, of developing and executing consultation and prayer during a 5 week period, each night focusing on those wonderful words from Joy of the Gospel, paragraph 24. And then 3 of those weeks involved missionary outreach and consultation and asking people in the peripheries, people who are generally kind of on the margins of society and the church, how can the church better serve them? And then it went to a diocesan encuentro where all the beauty of that consultation was brought to the table. That was then went to a regional one. So in our Episcopal Region 6, which includes Michigan and Ohio, we met this past weekend with over 300 delegates from these two states and the bishops from these states to reflect on recommendations and thoughts and hopes and aspirations and develop priorities for our region that will then be taken to the national gathering, which will be in September in Grapevine, Texas. Which will be in many ways it's going up the mountain and then we will be coming down the mountain and bringing from that pinnacle, if you will, in September, the fruit of a lot of prayer and engagement, over 350,000, 400,000 people have been engaged over 26,000 people have been trained as leaders to lead all these groups. Multi-level networks of support
And
and
many of these are
teams.
lay people.
All of them,
All of
mostly.
them.
Oh, mostly, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a massive undertaking. We are in 90% of the dioceses in the country have participated, close to 5,000 parishes. As I said, over 350,000, 400,000 people, and 20 plus thousand leaders have emerged. And what's beautiful about this is, precisely because of the Encuentro process, there are 300 and I think it's 56 parishes in the country that, in light of the fifth Encuentro process and engagement on the parish level, began to celebrate now the Sunday Eucharist in Spanish for their communities. That didn't exist prior to that. So, and the best is yet to come, right? Because what's most exciting about me is what will this fifth Encuentro leave as a mark? Every Encuentro that's happened left a mark of the Spirit. What will be this one?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine the Catholic Church of the United States without the word might be vibrant, there might be others, but a completely engaged Spanish speaking, if you will.
40% of the Catholic population right now, of the overall Catholic population in the country, is of Hispanic background. 60% 18 and under, 51% 20, like do the math. Just do the math. And what a gift, right? What a gift of being enriched in the church by this vibrant, beautiful culture.
Yeah, the potential harvest is
In our own
incredible.
diocese, over 130,000 and growing, and they're certainly a blessing to all of us.
Yeah, plenty to talk about here with Bishop Nelson Perez of the Diocese of Cleveland on this special program here on the Rock. It's called Table Talk. I'm your host, Dick Russ. We're going to take a quick break here and be back with some of the questions that you, our listeners, have sent in to us over the last few weeks for Bishop Perez. And we'll get to that and some other issues when we return with more of Table Talk right after this quick break. Welcome back to Table Talk, a special program here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. We're glad you're with us for this. Bishop Nelson Perez in the studio with us. I'm Dick Russ, your host, and right now we'd like to get Bishop to some of the questions that folks have sent in to us. We, ask them to tell us what's on their mind, and so that you can, help to answer their questions, and we can discuss them a little bit. The first program we had a couple of months ago, we discussed some of the issues of the day at that time, current events and so on, and we did get a couple of questions and comments about one of the things that has recently happened in the last couple of weeks, and that was the vote in Ireland to repeal their Eighth Amendment, which protected the lives of unborn children by granting them the status of human life along with the mother. And so we did get a couple of comments on that. And here's one from Keith in Strongsville. He wrote to us, "It is a sad day in the world. Another country that used to be Catholic just voted to murder babies. It was overwhelmingly repealed," and he's referring to the amendment. "We need to preach from the streets, from the pulpit, and anywhere else we can to make an impact." And along the same lines, Ron from Parma wrote to us, "With what happened in Ireland, when the U.S. elections come up in the year 2020, will Catholic churches again not be allowed to hand out pro-life literature or speak from the pulpit about candidates' programs and beliefs, thus turning the backs on the deaths of 4,000 babies a day?" First, about the vote overall, anyone who, you know, believes and practices what our Catholic faith teaches has to be appalled at what happened there.
Eldick, yeah, it's as the individual said, so it's sad. It's just a sad reality that reflects what's happened in the world. And in the United States, it happened with Roe v. Wade, that I think the consequences of that have been, in all areas of life, have been just terrifying, terrifying. And certainly the church in the United States has raised its prophetic voice and the bishops consistently about that, constantly. There's no doubt that the official teaching of the church and the position of the bishops in this country on life is clear. You ask anybody what the Catholic Church teaches on abortion, and even if they don't really know much about the Catholic Church, they know that what the church's position is, because it really has been so widespread in raising our voice against that. It's just sad. There's another Catholic country, you know, and that's at times what is disturbing, that that sometimes in that area, sometimes Catholics don't see it. Obviously, the numbers show it. Don't see it the way the teachings of the church see it, you know, and it started with life in the womb, and now we're on the other end of the spectrum, you know, assisted suicide, euthanasia. You know, when did we get the power to decide when life begins? Who gave us that power?
To the part of the question from the gentleman in Parma, Ron, when elections come up, you know, you can't go to the pulpit and say, "Vote for this person, don't vote for this person." That doesn't happen. But generally, to educate people about, you know, the importance of the non-negotiable issues.
Right. And in my practice has been to speak about life and to speak about the sacredness of life and how we need, without using names, because at the end they know what I'm talking about. But because of the laws of this country, you know, we can't, it's not proper for us to promote one candidate over another from the pulpit. But to me, this issue is not a political issue. It is a moral
Moral issue.
issue, right? So this is not about politics. This is about the moral life and the life and the soul of a country. It's bigger than a political issue and a platform, and a candidate. It's bigger than that. You know, over the years, candidates have come and gone. But we still raise our voice to on this moral issue, the defense of life and the sacredness of human life.
Yeah, and I think people look to the church, to the priests, to the bishop, to
Sure.
those who have a public voice in defense of life,
Right.
to guide them, encourage them, and even to teach them, because you say it's a moral issue, and not everyone obviously has the, you know, the correct moral outlook on what certain life issues are.
And more, you know, the church today on a lot of issues is once again where the church has been most of the time, and that is countercultural. 60 years ago, the social reality of the world, or at least in the United States, and the views of the church kind of walked together. People got married, we defended life, protected life, you know. But then the church, the world began to change. The church did not go along with that change. We were just about to celebrate 50 years of Humanae Vitae, of Paul VI, and an incredible moment. Talk about a prophetic document. A prophetic document. And the church over the last 50 or 60 years has gone back to those moments where it has spent most of its time, you know, raising its prophetic voice, saying to the world, being the conscience of the world in a lot of ways, talking about life and talking about the presence of God and respect for God and family and marriage, all these issues today that the world around us are now going in another direction. So the church is not in this for a popularity contest. It is not, the church is not in this for an opinion vote. This, for the church, this is about revealed truth. And it's about the truth as revealed to us by Almighty God. And so the church is where it's been in a sense, most persecuted, but most comfortable, right? Because that is where when the church and the world around it were way too comfy, it wasn't always a good thing.
Along the lines of being a prophetic voice, our next question from one of our listeners to The Rock. Her name is Gay. She didn't say where she's from. Do our priests have opportunities to continually develop their preaching, to teach us Catholic perspectives on challenging moral issues of the day? There is a depth of Catholic thought in these areas, and we don't always hear it from the pulpit. Developing the preaching, I guess you would say, skills
Right.
of priests.
Right. And there's a moment and there's a time and a place in the homily to do that, but the homily is a particular moment, right? The homily is there to teach, but the homily is there to be rooted in the scriptures of the day and in the context of the scriptures of the day to then preach the truth, right? And there are all sorts of opportunities, well, in the seminary, for deacons or permanent deacons and for priests who are in formation, there is extensive amount of preparation and training and homiletics in the art of preaching. And then, like everything else, right, it then gets rooted in the personality of the individual, as it is for all of us, right? So that there are some people who are more outgoing and verbal and that comes very easily, and they're engaging. And then there are others that are a little bit more introverted, you know. So it's all sorts of personality traits always, you know, go into that. But certainly the preaching of the homily is central. Pope Francis in the Joy of the Gospels dedicates a whole section to the homily, right? Because it is the place of there are two altars at every Eucharist. There's the altar of the Word and the altar of the breaking of the bread of the Eucharist. And God nourishes his people in both. You know, the fathers of the council, Second Vatican Council, spoke about how we are nourished at two tables. And the homily is a place of great nourishment.
What may complicate that as well in some people's eyes is there's so much media today, and
Mm-hmm.
everywhere you go, someone is saying something,
Right.
whether it's articulately, you know, it's online and on your phone and wherever you go, and maybe they think that people have, you know, the priests have to keep up in a similar style or dynamism because everywhere you go, you're bombarded with
Oh, absolutely.
messages, you
Yeah.
know.
Lots of messages.
You're listening to Table Talk here on AM 1260, a special program featuring Nelson Perez, the Bishop of the Diocese of Cleveland. And we're going to continue for the rest of this hour with more of your questions and some more insight on issues of the day and what's happening in and around the Diocese of Cleveland when we come back with more of Table Talk right after this brief timeout. Welcome back to Table Talk here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio, our periodic special program where we take questions from you, our listeners, and discuss them with Bishop Nelson Perez. Bishop, once again, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dick. It's great to be here.
Always a pleasure. We've got a couple of more questions from some of our listeners, and one of them concerns holy days. Mm-hmm. This person is anonymous, but we've verified the question. Dear Bishop, it seems we have fewer and fewer holy days of obligation as they continue to be exempted when they fall near the weekend. For example, the celebration of Ascension was moved to a Sunday. Can a bishop move these back to Thursday? Different dioceses do it different ways. What are your thoughts about these exemptions, and how does this really work?
Well, this was my first Ascension Thursday that wasn't Ascension Thursday, I have to say. So it was. I could understand the person who sent in, because I came from the Northeast, and in the Northeast, Ascension Thursday was Ascension
Thursday. Okay.
So this was the first time I celebrated Ascension Thursday on Sunday. So that was new to me. I believe that's an issue that gets decided by the bishops of the state and the Catholic Conference of the State of Ohio in this sense. I really, to be honest with you, I don't know, if I as the bishop could change that. I would have to, kind of respect my brother bishops and the custom that has been here in Northeast Ohio. It's something that I would have to look into.
The holy day is still the holy day.
The holy day is the holy day.
Ascension, for example, here is no longer a feast.
No, it's the feast is celebrated on Sunday. Mm-hmm. In some places of the world, for example, Corpus Christi is celebrated on another day, but here it's celebrated on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then there are other holy days that when they reach, the weekends, it's not that the holy day is not celebrated, is that the obligation is lifted. But in the United States, I have to say, we have a lot of holy days. In other countries, there are less. But in the United States, we still have, the Assumption, December 8th, January 1st, this is one of the only places that January 1st, the Feast of the Mother of God,
yes. Yeah.
is a holy day of obligation. In other places in the world, it's not.
Here's a question from Doris at a parish in the city of Cleveland. Dear Bishop, can we have a chapter of the group Courage International in the Cleveland Diocese? Courage International is an organization that assists individuals with same-sex attraction to live chaste lives following the teachings of the Catholic Church.
I'm familiar with Courage. I admire their work. They're right spot on with the Church's teaching, and I would certainly be very open to exploring that for the Church of Cleveland. The executive director of Courage, Father Phil Bachansky, is actually a priest of Philadelphia, where I was a priest for 23 years. So we know each other well, actually. And I admire their work in being very, very compassionate with people with same-sex attraction and understanding their challenges and being there to serve them pastorally and strengthening them spiritually, and at the same time be faithful to the Church's teaching.
Is that something that starts with a grassroots effort, or how does that come about, your experience in other other dioceses?
It kind of happens at the grassroots level, and Courage is very people are very familiar with Courage and very supported by the Church and the bishops.
Here's a question from a couple. They belong to Holy Rosary Parish. Dear Bishop Perez, my wife and I are NFP teachers, Natural mm-hmm. Family Planning teachers, through the Couple to Couple League. They're parishioners at Holy Rosary in Cleveland and teach their classes. I just read an article about the Archdiocese of Cincinnati developing a program of education for their Catholic school system based on theology of the body. What do you foresee happening in the Cleveland Diocese in this regard in the near future? And they go on to say that many people are lifelong Catholics who have never heard or taught anything about theology of the body or natural family planning, and they discovered from each other, it said online or word of mouth. Any thoughts on that, theology of the body?
Well, very familiar with it, and actually, I'm really happy because we are now exploring the implementation of incorporating theology of the body curriculum K through 12 in the Diocese of Cleveland, and there is actually a committee of educators and theologians and putting all that together. Because we're moving in the direction of introducing that right all across our school system. So I'm really, really excited about that.
You've been much more deeply involved in the schools lately. I know you've visited elementary schools, some of the high schools, and so on. This it seems to be a priority.
Absolutely, and that's why right now in the catechetical office that oversees the Catholic teaching in the schools and in our PSR programs, our religious education programs on the parishes, is that's front and center. So right now, that's the direction that we are going is to develop, lay down the foundation, the groundwork, the training. To actually begin to do that in the years to come. It'll take a little while, but there are about 60 individuals, I'm told, teachers and priests and who have been trained in theology of the body, at the Theology of the Body Institute, actually, as catechists. So I'm certainly thrilled. I brought in theology of the body to my last parish where we were at. We were one of the first parishes actually at the time to incorporate theology of the body for middle schoolers in the parish where I was at.
When you go into the schools, either elementary or secondary, what else are you looking for? What things are you thinking about, both what you observe and what you might hope for, and what's being done well, and what your aspirations are, Bishop?
Well, obviously I want the schools to be Catholic. That's what distinguishes our schools from every other school, right?
And to that point, your office did share with us the results of a study, which was a longitudinal study that did conclude kids who go to Catholic schools are better disciplined, go to college more. There were many factors in there that separated them from the cohort that were in the public schools, as good as the public schools might have been. There was some defining factor. It was both religion and the discipline and what happens in the Catholic schools that separated them out.
And to me, to refine that even more, because you don't need to go to a Catholic school to find discipline either. You could go to a secular academy.
A charter school
that does that. What is even more specific about a Catholic school is that it's Catholic, that front and center of the Catholic school is the proclaiming of the gospel and the celebrating of the sacraments. And what I go around a lot to elementary schools and high schools, and I always ask the kids, what is special about this school? What makes this school, and such a great school? And at every school I've been at, the kids speak about that they could pray and talk about God. And come to Mass. It's amazing, right? It's really amazing. Even in some of our schools we have a couple of schools that are wonderful schools that are majority non-Catholic, right? And church serves them because the church understands that education is a good in and of itself for the common good, right? And I celebrated Mass at a school that was 90-something% non-Catholic. The deacon, who was my MC at that Mass, said to me, Father Deacon Bruce Batista, said to me, that was one of the most reverent Masses I ever went to. And they were 90-something% non-Catholic.
Non-Catholics.
It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And they're being exposed to the Catholic faith and the Catholic values and moral teachings. What a gift. What a gift this is to the church and to the world of Cleveland.
You certainly speak enthusiastically about it, Bishop.
Absolutely.
There's no question that it rates high on your priorities. We do have time in this segment of Table Talk, our special program here on AM 1260 The Rock, to get to one more question here. And it concerns our respect for the Holy Eucharist. You talk about a reverent mass. One of our listeners called in with some concerns that not everyone has the proper disposition toward the Holy Eucharist, and that it can occur on both sides, from the laity and perhaps at times from clergy. That not to say that it's become routine, but do we all understand the fullness of what the Holy Eucharist is, and that perhaps next to the incarnation of Christ himself, it is the most awesome thing that humanity could ever imagine?
Well, let me just say this. I don't think we could fully understand that mystery.
Yeah.
You know, it is such a mystery. Mysteries are not meant to be understood. They're meant to be contemplated, as we do before the Eucharist, right? When we go to adoration before the Eucharist, we contemplate. We contemplate. We enjoy just being in the presence of the Eucharistic Lord. Sometimes lack of catechesis has resulted at times in not fully being as reverent as we should before the Eucharist. It is the sacrament of the Lord's presence in our midst. It's not a symbol. It's not representing, as other Christian groups might see it. For us, it is the real presence of Christ. It is the Christ who walked the land and the world. It is the Christ who sat and broke bread at the Last Supper. It is the Christ who died on the cross. It is the Christ who rose from the dead. And that powerful presence of Christ is given to us as a great gift, and we have to be the custodian of that. At times, as the world becomes more and more secular, that becomes more and more challenging. Mm-hmm. You could have a doctorate in physics and have a sixth grade education in theology. If the last time you seriously sat to explore and learn about your faith was when you were confirmed, and then it stopped. And you could have triple doctorates in something else, but when it comes to your own theological understanding, it needs a lot of work.
And one thing that, speaking about reverence for the Holy Eucharist, here in the Cleveland area, in the Diocese of Cleveland, more and more parishes and churches have begun the practice and revived the practice of Eucharistic adoration. Mm-hmm. And I have had it related to me that where that happens, many, many good things accrue from that.
My first parish as a pastor had Eucharistic adoration 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A place of incredible strength and consolation and peace for me, as well as all the people that went in there day in and day out. There never was a moment, day or night, that there weren't people in there praying before the Blessed Sacrament.
And those who have experienced it here in the Diocese of Cleveland, whether it's more recent or it's been a longer-standing practice in their particular church or parish, have testified, Bishop, just as you said, about the I've heard the word awesome things that happen both in the parish community, the family, the personal life, all those things.
You don't go before the presence of the Blessed Sacrament and leave the same. You don't.
You're listening to Table Talk with Bishop Nelson Perez, the Bishop of the Diocese of Cleveland, and we have just a little bit of time left, so why not take a short break now, and we'll be back to wrap things up in just a couple of minutes. Please stay with us, because there's more to come. Welcome back to Table Talk, a special presentation of Cleveland Catholic Radio, AM 1260, The Rock. I'm your host, Dick Russ, and in this special program, as always, our special guest is Bishop Nelson Perez. Bishop, we have a few minutes left and a couple of things we'd like to get to. You, at the time this program airs, will be at the USCCB meeting, the bishops meeting for all the bishops of the U.S., and you will be back in your home state of Florida.
I'll be back,
You'll be back in Fort Lauderdale.
Fort
and when
Lauderdale.
We took a break, you told me that you're kind of torn going back down to Florida.
It's a little cruel to put the bishops on the beach and not let them go to the beach with a schedule that, you know, goes 12-hour days. But, you know, I always look forward to gathering with the brother bishops. I've been so impressed since I've been a bishop to see the level of their love for the church, their prayerfulness, their spirituality, their excitement for the church. It's so wonderful to walk into chapel, you know, early in the morning at 6 o'clock, and it's packed with the bishops praying silently. It's impressive, and for me has been personally edifying.
I have to say, probably necessary and as you said, very edifying. One of the things we touched on it briefly is your, I guess you would say, report to them about Encuentro.
I will be addressing the body of bishops, giving them an update.
Yeah, what would they be looking for from you on this?
I think they want to see the ongoing, though they get ongoing reports, but to see where we are at this time and to continue to build the momentum and excitement for the national Encuentro in September in Grapevine, and I ask everybody to pray for that. And it's a time also to answer questions that they might have. And in a lot of ways, it informs the country too, because that is also broadcasted live by EWTN.
Yes.
So the country also hears about that and many of the other issues that will be discussed by the bishops.
Another thing that appears to be on your agenda is, it's called Ethical and Religious Directives for Catholic Healthcare. We had talked about the abortion vote in Ireland, and you then mentioned things that are looming for all of us to be on guard about and make decisions, end-of-life issues,
right.
Assisted suicide, euthanasia, these things, even when we're not talking about older people who may be approaching the end of their natural lives.
Right.
I mean, you just had the Alfie Evans thing in Britain. Last year, it was Charlie Gard. Mm-hmm.
Terry Schiavo years ago here,
You know, things are getting away from us, and how do we as Catholics respond in light of our faith and engage the secular world about these kind of issues, because everyone deals with it.
Well, the ethical and religious directives is certainly a way in which the church in the United States, the bishops of the United States, especially when secular hospitals enter into relationship with traditionally Catholic hospitals, they have to sign on to these ethical and religious directives.
It happens all the time. It's happened here in Northern Ohio, too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of regional hospitals have been taken over by Cleveland Clinic or UH, and that's part of the deal. So if the hospital wants to retain its Catholic identity, right, the local bishop has to sign off on that. And part of signing off on that is the agreement that they will follow the ethical and religious directives as set forth by the Bishops' Conference, which speaks about all sorts of medical practices that would not be, in concert with the Church's moral teachings on the dignity of the human person and the sacredness of life.
That's a very weighty issue for the bishops.
Very much so, yeah.
And I think that, you know, the people, the faithful, and even the secular, the non-Catholic people, would look for some kind of guidance, because even if you're not Catholic, many people, maybe even most people of goodwill, look at things like, withdrawing food and hydration from a baby, a child, a toddler, and letting him or her
elderly.
Die. And say, wait, something's not right about this. Help inform me.
Right, you know, and I recently said, you know, what's the difference between this withdrawing hydration and nutrition, between doing that and withdrawing the supply of air? The only difference is that it's time.
Yes.
Right, in one way, you die right away. Right, it's time. That's the only difference. And the church is very clear on that and many other issues involving the moral teaching of the church and reproductive medicine and all of that.
Yeah, we discussed the last time the issue we had here in Cleveland with the hundreds and hundreds of frozen embryos.
Well, that's what happens when you start messing around really in places we shouldn't have been messing around with in the first place. It's Genesis all over again, right? God said to the world, to humanity, listen, Knock yourself out. Look at all you have to play. Look at this playground, this paradise. However, stay away from that tree, which is the tree of knowledge, right? Of knowing what is good and evil. That doesn't belong to you. That is revealed to you. It doesn't belong to you. But curiosity killed the cat, right? And that's where we went. And that's where we continue to go. And now is the consequences of that. We see the natural consequences of what happens when we start delving. Now there's a lot of pain around it, and these families have suffered great loss. But that's what happens when we start messing around and playing around in places that even though we can go to that place, it doesn't mean we should. Right? God gave us the freedom. And then told us the way. So even though we can go to places, doesn't always mean that it is the wisest place to go.
Before we say goodbye, Bishop, we wanted to thank you, all of us at AM 1260, for celebrating our third anniversary
That was
mass for us
wonderful.
recently. We were very honored by that. So
Yeah, and so
thank
was
you, and
I.
thanks for your
Thank you.
support of the media here, the radio station.
And Dick, I want to congratulate you because you're having a great celebration coming up. Your
Thank you.
son's being ordained a priest of the
Yes.
Roman Catholic Church on July 15th, Father Andre, a Jesuit.
Yes, he's
You
a
know, tell us about
Well,
that.
he's a Jesuit. He's a good young man. He's been in the Society of Jesus a little over 11 years, living in Rome for the last few years, and he will be ordained in the middle of July at St. Josephat Ukrainian Catholic Cathedral in Parma, and we couldn't be more blessed than to have a priest. And so now my wife Chris and I will know, and our whole family, his brothers, our other children and grandchildren, what it's like to have a priest in the family. And
Right.
you kind of know, but
Now
to
you'll
be
know.
now we'll know. And I have to say thank you for mentioning that. It is a blessing beyond
It also says
any
a lot
belief.
about your family, right?
Well,
It says a lot about your family and how you guys lived your faith to the point that one of your own has decided to give himself to the church and to Christ.
God has been good. He has
Yeah,
blessed us.
all the
He's
time.
blessed us abundantly. And before we go, Bishop, would you kindly say a closing prayer and give us your blessing?
Lord, we thank you for the many gifts you give us each day. We pray for Father Andre, who will be serving the church as a priest, and for his family who celebrates this great moment in the life of the church worldwide and here in this area, and for the Jesuit community. We ask that you bless all of us, all those who listen to us today. You know the needs and the dreams and the aspirations, as well as the sadness and challenges in their lives. We ask you to bless all of them, all of us, with your generosity and care. And may Almighty God bless you, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Amen. Be at peace.
Thank you. Thank you,
Thank
Bishop
you.
Nelson Perez. And thank you for listening to this edition of Table Talk here on AM 1260, The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. We're grateful for your tuning into this, and we hope you will join us next time and send us your questions for Bishop Perez. Table Talk at am1260therock.com. And time permitting, we'll get your question in the next episode of our program. Thanks again, Bishop,
Thank you,
and we'll
Dick.
see you next time here on AM 1260, The Rock.